Hello, and welcome to another virtual author chat at the Poison Pen Bookstore. I'm John Charles, and I'm delighted to have with us today Anne Gabhart, who is visiting us virtually for the very first time. Before we begin our chat, I do want to mention we have copies of Anne's new book, Along a Story Trail, at the Poison Pen, and we would be happy to send one to you or hold one for you. All you need to do is go online to the bookstore or give us a call, and a copy will be waiting for you. Now, without further ado, I'd like to welcome in Anne. Hello, Anne.
Hello, I'm glad to be here. It's always fun to talk books and writing.
That's wonderful. My first question for you is, I know a lot of readers like to know who the author was before they became a writer. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself prior to your writing career?
Well, that might go back a long ways because I started wanting to be a writer when I was about 10 years old.
Okay.
I sold my first book in 1978, so that's been a long time ago. But I'm just a was just a mother, farm wife, and have done some temporary secretarial work along through the years. But mostly, I've concentrated on my writing. And the last few years, after I started writing the inspirational fiction, I've been able to be more regular with the publication. I had published some books for young adults and a couple of historical romances in the general market prior to the books that I've written now for Revell, the inspirational novels.
Is it fair to say that you got your start as a writer due to Nancy Drew, the Hardy Boys, and chickens?
It's pretty close because I like the Hardy Boys actually better than Nancy Drew. I always wanted to be a Hardy girl. I didn't really want to be a boy, but I always thought it would be a lot of fun to solve a mystery. But where I grew up out on the farm, there wasn't much mysterious happening. So that's why I started writing my own mystery, starring myself, a much cuter, smarter, and much less shy self at the time. But we had a lot of fun with the book, but I eventually outgrew it, started writing short stories for while I was a teenager that are hidden away in some drawer and probably will never be found again. And eventually I found out that novel writing was what I really enjoyed doing the most.
I read somewhere that one of your first things that you actually wrote for publication as a professional was about chickens. Can you
Well,
explain?
actually the first income or things that I made money, not exactly money, but chickens. When I was in the sixth grade, I was in the 4-H, and they had a contest that you could write an essay, and the essay would, whoever had the best essay would win 100 baby chicks. So I won 100 baby chicks by my essay that I wrote when I was in the sixth grade 4-H club. So in a way, that was my first income from writing.
Let's talk a little bit about your new book, Along a Story Trail. What can you tell those listening in about the book?
Well, it's a book that I had written two books set in the Appalachian Mountains about the Frontier Nursing Service previously. And a reader sent me information about the book women, the pack horse librarians. And so I began researching about those and thought, well, I like writing about the mountain people. So this might be a good subject for me to delve into. And the pack horse librarians were very interesting. It was a work program during the Great Depression, and it was a way to put women to work, usually women in the mountains that were destitute or needed special help. And they would take a route into the mountains and carry the books out on a horse or mule. It's sort of like a bookmobile, only by 4 legs instead of 4 wheels, and they would carry the books up to the people. So I decided to make my character a bookwoman, and then of course she meets a lot of people along the way, and has a lot of different family relationships too. And you get into the mountains, and the mountain people—they're very family-oriented, and so that made the extra into the book to be able to pull into her family and different relations.
How do you go about researching your books? In this case, your latest one, do you use certain sources Do you look at diaries? What is the process about finding those details that you, historical details you put into the book? How do you go about that?
Well, normally I like to research in books a lot, but of course now with the internet, you can find so many articles. And really with the book women, I found a lot of articles, Smithsonian, and then I found a treatise or a doctorate that someone wrote about the book women, and I was able to read that even though it wasn't published. And so you can find so many different ways to locate information. I did not find a diary on this, but that is one way that I really enjoy researching, when I'm able to find a journal or a diary that's set at that time. I've done that in previous books. I didn't get to do that in this book, but I enjoyed just finding out about the book women and reading about them. There was one book that I had that did have personal experiences, talked about the different things that they did. And I used some of those or changed them a bit, but I used several of those in my book that were from my research where the book women talked about. Well, like the one I have, my Tansy having her foot frozen to the stirrups, and that was from my research that I had seen that they said that happened occasionally.
You have a lot of details in there that are fascinating. One thing that I had vaguely known about, but you brought back to my memory, was the chestnut tree blight that occurred.
Right. When I was deciding where to set my book, I went down into Eastern Kentucky and went around to some of the different libraries just to talk to the people and try to decide which place would be the best, and sort of to give the landscape a look to see if it would match my idea of what kind of terrain the book woman might be facing. And one of the librarians I met, he told me, he says, "Well, you can't write a story about that, about the Appalachian Mountains at that time, without talking about the chestnut trees and what a difference it made to the people in the area." So I also researched a lot about those too. And it is amazing how that did affect the people and caused them to have much more poverty than they had had in previously, because they had depended on those chestnuts feeding their stock, and also feeding the wildlife that they hunted for food. And then they would take them to town and sell them too. So it was a big difference for them. And chestnut wood's great to build with as well. So there were a lot of things that were hurt by losing those chestnut trees.
And then you had other details about Tansy and her fellow librarians. I had no idea that they would actually make books up by like cutting magazines and things like that. That was new to me.
Well, they didn't. While the government paid the book women's salaries, they did not supply any books. They didn't supply the place. The community had to supply room for the library, and then the books were all donated. So there weren't a lot of books in the community. So different places began sending books, and some of the big libraries that would throw away magazines or books after they began to get worn, they would send them then down to this central area in London. And then in London, the people would, that's London, Kentucky, mm-hmm. the people would distribute them to the different libraries. And sometimes the magazines, when they came in, they couldn't circulate them because they were too torn up. So they began just making books. You can still see a few of those online. A few of them survived the years, and I think they have them in museums in the different places. Sometimes they would take birds and or pretty pictures and put poetry. Sometimes they would just put factual amounts about the books. And then they did also gather recipes and quilt patterns to make books of local interest. So that was sort of fun to come across those be able to see those on the internet.
There's a strong sense of place in your books, in this case, Appalachia and Kentucky. Can you talk a little bit about setting for you as an author? And for those of us that are not familiar with that region, what does it mean to you as a writer?
Well, I'm not actually an Appalachian person. I live in the central part of Kentucky, and that is the eastern part. I have, of course, been through there a number of times, but I didn't grow up in the mountains. But I did grow up on a farm. I do have a very strong sense of a home here on my land that I've lived on all my life. I don't live on the farm that I was born on, but I live about a mile away from that farm. So, you know, I've still got a lot of connection with the land. And so I think I identify with the mountain people in that way, that we have that strong feeling for the land. I set all of my books in Kentucky. Sometimes we go somewhere else during the book, but most of the books have Kentucky settings, and I sort of like to stick to Kentucky settings because I know the weather here in Kentucky, I know the people in Kentucky, and I like finding out about the history of Kentucky, so that makes it fun to research. And you can find the books well in the Kentucky libraries because they have more of the Kentucky books. But I like being able to set the stories in my home area.
One of the other characters that Tansy meets is sent there by a federal writing project, the Federal Writers Project. Can you talk a little bit about that? Was that based on the Works Project Administration effort to get writers out?
That was. I didn't really know about that. I knew that about the work projects. The post office here in my hometown was built by WPA workers. But until I began researching, I didn't realize that they had such a far-reaching different works. They had sewing projects for women, different types of things. And then I had no idea they had the Writers Project or the Arts Project, because it wasn't just for writers, it was also for actors and performers. Mm-hmm. That they had a way of putting them to work too. So when I came across that, I thought, well, that would be interesting to send a city boy up into the mountains to interact with my character. The idea was that these writers would go into the area and make like a guide for tourists, and they would tell them about the noteworthy parts of the community, some stories, and then they would send all that into a central location, and then that location would try to put together a guidebook. And I actually bought the guidebook that Kentucky does have. It didn't get published during the Depression. The war came along and kept people from thinking about that as much, but years later it was turned into a guidebook where you can look at each county and they tell you about this or that happening in that county. And so it's sort of a interesting slice of life back from the 1930s and so forth. It's a little different than we would think now, but it's sort of fun to look at. So then they also have the Civilian Conservation Corps that was interesting too. And since the book has come out, I've heard from a lot of people, some readers have said, well, my dad was in the Civilian Conservation Corps. He planted trees here or there. And out in California, they had a whole lines of a certain kind of tree that the Conservation Corps planted. And I do know that they worked a lot in the Smoky Mountains, building trails and that new park and that sort of thing. And that was for young men. It was for unmarried men between 18 and 26, I think. And they would pay them a salary, but they were required to send most of it home to their family. So they could keep a portion of it, but most of it went home to the family to support them. And that was just a way that they were helping people find a way to put food on their table. And it helped the country too, because we planted a lot of trees.
Yeah, it's true. Family does play an important part in the book. There's the family that we have, that we're born with, and the family that we make for ourselves. And you kind of have examples of both. Can you talk a little bit about the role of family in Along a Story Trail?
Well, in this, in the mountains, people are very family oriented. If you're of relation, maybe you don't maybe want to claim the family or want to do with the family, but the family's still family, so you take care of them. And when I brought Perdita Sweet into it, she's one of those contrary older cousins that maybe you don't care whether she shows up at your door or not, but if she does, you're going to have to open it and let her in and help her out. And I enjoyed writing about Perdita. I don't know whether that says something about me, but it was a lot of fun being in the viewpoint of this contrary older lady. So I had a good time when it was her viewpoint time. But then we also have the family, as you say, the family of the heart. Sometimes a lot of my other books have also had that sort of family relationships in my stories, that you don't have to necessarily be kin by blood to have that family feel amongst yourselves and other people.
I know many readers are fascinated by an author's writing process. Can you talk a little bit about how you approach a book? Do you usually start with an idea for a character, or is it a plot line that leads you off? Does it vary?
Well, it varies. This book was probably my 36th published book. So with 36 books, I've come at it a lot of different ways. Sometimes it's the setting that begins my what if thinking. I do like the characters to be central. I think my stories are usually pretty much character centered. And so once I have the history, a lot of times the history is also a starting point. Like for this one, I mean, the book women, the Path Course librarian part was the initial idea. I've also written stories that were inspired by my own family stories and family or my own background. So sometimes that's the beginning point, but then I like to drop my characters down into that particular time of history and see where they want to go with that. And then they generally will take over the story and make a difference. Mm-hmm. I want it to be realistic to the history of the time. And I don't like changing the history. I mean, I don't want to switch dates, or if it doesn't work out, I have to change my idea and say, well, that couldn't have happened in that year. So I'll have to either have it another year or have something else happen.
You have written a number of books and you've been writing for quite a while. If you had the opportunity today to go back in time to when you were first starting out as a writer, what advice would you give yourself about publishing and writing?
Have patience, perseverance. I did read something early on that was, I don't know whose quote it was now, but it was something about that you needed to take rejections and take acceptances about the same as you did rejections. You can't get too high with the exceptions. You can't get too low with the rejections if you want to write more than one book. I have known people that sort of put all their apples in one basket, but I wasn't that type. Once I got finished with the book, I sent it off to my agent or whatever I planned to do with that particular piece of writing. And then I came up with a new idea and started again. And that was another thing that I read early on, that a writer had said, that's what you, at that time, we didn't do everything virtually or electronically. We put it in little packages and sent it out in the mail. And she said, well, you send it out to your first guy on your list and you get it back, you send it the second one on your list and on. And by the time it comes back the 13th or 14th time, you should be about finished with the next book. And so that was good advice for me, that I knew that maybe that one wasn't going to work, but maybe my next story would catch an editor's eye. And I think that if you have that desire to write, the most important thing to do is to write. And the second most important might be to read. Reading is really an important part of learning to write. The more you read, it puts those words in your mind, even though you're not going to write the way anybody else writes, but still it's like exercise for your imagination. People are in the sports, they exercise for their muscles. Well, writers need to exercise by reading for their imaginations.
I'm glad you brought up reading, because something that fascinates me is what other people are reading, what they've enjoyed reading. So would you like to share some books that you may want to think other readers might enjoy?
I read a lot of different types of books. I do read in the inspirational market, but I also read in the general market a lot. I enjoyed, just recently enjoyed Water for Elephants. I thought it was a very well put characters. I really, you know, the characters came to life for me. I'm reading one of Laurie Benton's books right now, Many Sparrows. She's an inspirational writer. She's very good at making her characters come to life. I like a book that I can care about the character, that the character is somebody that I want to have a good turnout for. I enjoyed a little bit of a different book, the Guernsey Potato Peel Literary Book Club, because it was all written in letters, and only letters that she wrote, which was a very interesting way to tell a story. And so I sort of enjoy letters in a book or diary entries in a book. Last editor I had, she said she didn't like letters in books, but I once in a while I snuck some in there anyway. So it seems to be a thing I enjoy reading because it feels closer. And then I'm also reading some nonfiction too. I'm beginning to research on my new book. So I do a lot of reading in that way to research a new idea. I don't get as much fiction reading as I would like to. I have a whole stack, as I'm sure most readers do, that I just have to go to and try to see what I might want to read next. I hope to read one of Laura France's books this summer and some of the others that I haven't read before. I just read a Liz Johnson book. Yeah. I think. It was more of a romance. I generally like my romances mixed with history or mystery. And so I don't usually write a straight romance either. So when I pick a book, I usually pick one that has a little mystery or has some history in it. So it's just your own individual taste. I've written three mysteries as well. So I grew up enjoying, like you said, the Hardy Boys and other mystery books. So I like the form of writing the mysteries too. I just like to write a story, I think.
You have written for young adults. Do you ever plan on going back to that market, or?
I still have some books that I did self-publish one of my books that didn't find a market at that time. And I enjoyed the young adult books. I have a book half written in my computer that's actually like a fantasy, not science fiction exactly, but fantasy more. It's only half done. So whether I'll ever get back to that or not, I got sidetracked and writing these inspirational novels in between. But I did enjoy writing for the young adults. I really don't see a lot of difference between writing for young people and adults. It's just a little bit different storyline. Generally, I would say a shorter book, but a lot of the young adult books now are relatively long. So it's just according to what the idea presents itself. But right now, I plan to continue writing for adults for a while.
One thing that I wanted to ask you, I think there's sometimes this misperception about inspirational fiction and faith in books. What would you tell readers who may not be familiar with inspirational fiction about this genre that they might not be aware of?
Well, I don't think a lot of the new writers are not really, they just have a Christian worldview. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have a lot of different Christian in it. It's just, in my books, it's according to the book. Some of my books have more of faith elements in them. And like River to Redemption, it had a lot of faith element in it. This one had some with Perdita. She had a close relation with the Lord and didn't mind talking about it. And so I think it's the story that adds. I hesitated before I started writing inspirational fiction because I was a little concerned of whether I would be able to do it well. Didn't really want to be preachy. I'm not a preacher, I'm a writer. But once I got into the stories, I liked being able to put the character's faith journey in it. And I think that's really all that most inspirational fiction is now. It's just that that's part of their character's life and their faith journey is important to them. I have had reviewers that were not happy with the faith element in books, but you know, you write the story that's laid on your heart and the readers that like it, the readers that don't. But I enjoy putting the faith element in it. And it's easier to do that, I think, with a historical novel than it is with a contemporary novel. Now, my mysteries, my cozy mysteries are all contemporary. And it's more of a Christian worldview. There's not a lot of... I do have one character that does speak about their faith more, but really it's a mystery. And so it's not that much Christian elements in it. It's just according to the story. And the writer, I guess, too.
That's true. That's very, very true. You mentioned that you're starting work on your next book. Would you like to share anything about that? Or is that something that's still under wraps?
Well, the one that comes out next summer, you know, most people don't realize how long it takes a book to go from the what if initial idea to the actual being out there on the shelf for a reader to read. So the one that will be out next summer is, I am now editing it after I sent it to the editor and the editor has suggested ways that I might make it better. And I'm hoping I can make it better because that's what I want to do. But then I will be researching a book for then the 2023, I suppose, would be when it would be published. But the one that's I'm editing right now is a little bit different for me. It's a character-centric story again, and it's about a man who got badly burned in a fire when he was a young man and has sort of lived a reclusive life because of the scars on his face that it's set in the 1925. So it's before you might be able to have repaired that with plastic surgery. And he lost his love at the time too, but his brother has a wife and two children. His brother has died in the flu epidemic in 1918. And so his sister-in-law has tuberculosis and the two girls have ended up in the orphanage. And this man is called upon then to more or less rescue them from those situations. And they go out to the farm to live on meadowland with him. And it's how his heart has a way of waking back up and finding love again and finding family again after he's lived alone so long. But the name of it will be When the Meadow Blooms. The next book then after that will be about, I think it's going to be on the river with Showboat.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to those. I can't believe how quickly our time has flown by. This is The Poison Pen. We've been chatting with author Anne H. Gebert, whose new book is Along a Storied Trail, if I can get it on the screen. One of the best books I've read this summer, fascinating historical details, great characters. I'd like to thank Anne for taking time out to talk with us today. And
I enjoyed being here talking about writing, and I'm so glad you enjoyed the book. It always makes me smile to hear anybody say they enjoy one of my books.
It's a terrific read, and I want to thank everyone for tuning in. We'll see you next time, virtually or in person, at the Poison Pen Bookstore. Thank you.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.